Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by Local Journalism Initiative producer for CFRC, Jesse Bell. Our first story today is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering an interview with the creative team behind the Talk and Back with Johnny Mack.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Artists and curators are returning to the site of performance art series Talkin' Back to Johnny Mack after nearly 10 years to put on a second exhibition. Talkin' Back to Johnny Mack 2 is a series of performances set in City Park, revisiting the site of the former Sir John A. Macdonald statue, which was taken down in 2021 after local activists called for its removal and Kingston City Council ultimately agreed. The first iteration took place in 2015, when the statue still stood in City Park. Despite being spread across the country 9 years later and the statue being taken down, the original curators and artists are reuniting in Kingston to reignite the conversation surrounding historical monuments. The project has gathered a dynamic group of artists, including original contributors David Garneau, Leah Dechter, and Peter Morin, alongside newcomer Jimmy Kilpatrick, to engage the Kingston community in reflection and discussion through performance art. The exhibition will include performances ranging from spoken word poetry to karaoke, and the week will finish off with a lecture in Stauffer Library. Talkin' Back to Johnny Mack 2 is also being presented in partnership with the Agnes Etherington Arts Center at Queen's University. I sat down with curators Dr. Aaron Sutherland and Dr. Sebastian DeLine to discuss the return of Talkin' Back to Johnny Mack, running next week from October 21st to 25th in City Park. To start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to introduce yourself and give a bit of background on your work.
So my name's Aaron Sutherland, and I'm an independent curator and associate professor in the Department of Art and Design at the University of Alberta. I curated the first iteration of Talking Back to Johnny Mack when I was a PhD student at Queen's in 2015. And I'm looking forward to kind of bringing the conversation up again.
And hello, everyone. My name is Sebastian DeLine. I'm the Associate Curator of Care and Relations at the Agnes Etherington Arts Center on campus. So I am Aaron's co-conspirator and coordinating curator on the ground. And it's a pleasure to speak to you all today.
Awesome. And it's been 9 years since the first iteration of this project. What sparked the idea to bring it back? What's the story there? And Aaron, what brought you back on board now that you're based in Alberta?
That's a good question. I think that a lot of things have happened in Kingston since the original performance series. Specifically, the statue has been taken down of Johnny Macdonald. And I was really interested in just revisiting the conversation. So many people have been involved in this conversation beyond and outside of the performance. My performance series is just one small kind of drop in the bucket of the conversations that went on and have continued to go on about the legacy of Johnny Macdonald and the statue in Kingston. And I wanted to kind of just revisit it and see where the performance artists are now in their relationship to the statue and to Johnny Macdonald and to their performances that they did 9 years ago. I think that the conversation around toppling monuments has really changed since the original conversation, and more monuments have come down. And also the conversation about counter monuments has really kind of ramped up, or maybe not even ramped up, just changed. And so we've been, as I think as communities, been looking into the legacies of these monuments and the legacies of these colonial kind of people that we've in some cases iconicized or heroicized. And I wanted to just continue that conversation that was started 9 years ago.
Yeah. And Sebastian, did you have anything in on those beginnings sparking the idea to bring it back?
And I'm curious to think about how the artists will respond, you know, in thinking about futurities. In my mind, I often think about things not so much only as what has happened in the past, but where are we going forward from here? So I think it's a pretty exciting opportunity now to revisit the relationship to place and the relationship to the land and to this urban land environment, and thinking about that from an artist's perspective on where they envision that going forward. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, and it's not just the curators coming back, it's also the performers coming back. Do you have all the original performers from 9 years ago?
Not all of them. I have three of them, mm-hmm. And then a new artist. So Leah Dechter is back, Pierre Morin and David Garneau. And then we also have a new artist, Jimmy Kilpatrick, coming.
You were saying it's sort of a mystery to you what these artists are going to do. So are you kind of waiting in suspense?
Well, I know a little bit about what they're going to do. As a curator, I definitely know what they're going to do in general, but performance artists also kind of feel the audience out and respond to the moment. And so they could, you know, alter their performances in the moment. And I'm just, you know, I think what Sebastian said about futurities is really important. It's not necessarily like reflecting on what's happened, although that's part of it, but also looking forward to the future. Like, I really liked how you said that, Sebastian, because I think that's really where we're at, is how to move forward in time and think through these things. So yeah, I do have a general idea about what they're going to do, and I think, but it's nice for audience members to be surprised. But we've got you know, like a karaoke a party coming, and as part of a performance, we've got spoken word, we've got kind of like an installation style performance. And you know, I'm a scholar of performance art, and we've got lots of different kinds of performance art coming.
The statue was removed in 2021. You guys were talking about looking towards the future. I was wondering why return to the site as opposed to, you know, moving on to another monument, or, you know, what's the importance of reigniting this conversation at this specific site in Kingston?
Well, one of the conversations that Aaron and I were having leading up to the second iteration and revisiting the site is some of the activities that happen now. And one of the things I was sharing with Aaron is that it's interesting is when the monument was removed, they actually still, the basin on which the monument was placed is still present. And it's actually become a kind of a site where community gathers on a regular basis. You'll see vigils there, you'll see community activists coming and using it as a kind of a platform or a soapbox in which to convey their own messages, you know, and take up that agency themselves. And I think that that's a very, you know, interesting transformation that's happened to that place, that it still has that kind of activity, only it's transformed into this one, you know, solitary figure of history, of a particular kind of Canadian history, into a place where that's a living existing history in which everyday people can also take up that space. I don't know, Aaron, what do you think?
I love that. I love that it's being used. I moved away from Kingston, so I don't know exactly how community is using it. And I feel really honored to come back and be part of this kind of movement to using this space for community and for conversation. I completely agree, Sebastian. In Pierre Morin's original performance, he repurpose the statue into kind of like a pirate broadcast station to speak Indigenous knowledges across Turtle Island. And the colonial monument only tells one version of history, and it really speaks to a very specific notion of who Johnny MacDonald was. And I think with taking it down and now providing a space for, like Sebastian said, living histories and living communities to have various conversations, it just really opens up the space. And there's lots of different kinds of conversations that can be had there. And so I just kind of want to add a voice to the already amazing conversations going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most folks, especially in Kingston, know what you're talking about when you refer to these conversations. I was wondering if you could get a bit more into detail about what this conversation is, as well as what folks might be able to take away from the performances coming up in October.
I think that there'll be lots of different kinds of conversations going on because it's different people. From my perspective, I'm looking to think through the process of why we have monuments, what monuments have been created, what monuments have been taken down, and then also how people respond to these monuments. And sometimes the monuments are invisible, you know, and they're like historical remembrances that or narratives that get retold. And I'm looking to create alternative or space for alternative narratives.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of circling back, so we were talking about, you know, why come back to the original site, and you were saying how the space is used today and how fantastic that is. But why not go to Bellevue House? Why not go to one of the buildings named after Sir John A. MacDonald, Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard? Why return to this site?
That's such a good question. I think it's because of the place of the kind of plinth that's there, it and where it sits. You know, it's kind of that this the corner of this intersection. You can kind of walk towards it or come across it. But also it has basically a stage built for us, you know, that we can take up space. So I do totally understand your question. And I think that maybe future iterations of performances about this kind of these narratives could happen. But for right now, I think coming back to the same site, you know, brings up the original show and then also uses the space that is already being used to have conversations, but then also looks forward to the future. Like what do we do from here?
I could add to that if I can.
Yeah, please do.
Thinking about what Aaron is saying is an interesting proposition. Instead of always necessarily changing a location, sometimes it's an interesting way to revisit and change a changing context of a place and time. You know, so the proposition of being able to arrive a decade later in the same place is going to have a different context and a different different political space of gathering in time and place than we are right now. And it's in this moment where those conversations also then carry on from 10 years ago, but then into where we are now. And I think that that's a very special kind of proposition in terms of the history of performance art, too. I don't know, you know, Aaron, you know more about that subject matter than I do, but I would endeavor to say that there are fewer performance art pieces that actually have a durational kind of revisiting component as well, like that, and also in the changing of a context of a relationship to a particular place.
I really appreciate that you bring up the idea of relationships, because it's so key to my understanding of my curatorial process, is this building relationships. So I like to work with the same people, you know, over and over and over again. And it makes sense to me to work in the same site too. And I've worked with the Agnes. This will be my second time working with the Agnes. And I really love that I'm building these relationships, and that we come back, and it's not just, you know, one time event, we have long-term working relationships that build into friendships and things like that. So I, like Sebastian and I have built a friendship like through our process of curating the show. And I just really value those relationships. And I think I have a relationship to this site, having walked past it for, you know, about 7 years while I was at Queens and while the statue was there. And then I have this relationship to the statue, and I'm, you know, looking forward to just spending time again with the site.
You know, what's interesting about that site too, is that even before Johnny McDonald was born, you know, that place was also a place between very close by to a Mississauga village. And it was so within a few hundred meters nearby, there was already the place of a village site of Indigenous presences here in Kingston. And Kingston already has had a long history and presence with Wendat, Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabe peoples. And so that site already is a place of gathering long before. And even during different iterations of decades, you know, I did some interesting local research reading into how I believe it was Kingston-based artist Marnie McDermott did research on City Park. I think it was maybe in the, I want to say the 1970s, was also a space of queer gathering. And it was, if you can imagine, if people can envision City Park, it was a lot more densely inhabited with trees at the time. It was almost more like a forest. And through that, those relationship of that being like a queer cruising ground, basically, it was actually a lot of the trees were kind of sort of timely cut down in a way. And it more so over the relationship to that place transformed into becoming what it is today, which is a lot more, I would say, manicured and kind of sterilized. And so it's had all these different histories of peoples being in that place and time, which make it quite an interesting space to converge. So rather than only responding necessarily to it's, so to me, it's not only about responding to John A. McDonald, but it's about also saying, okay, yes, John A. McDonald has this very big stamp on Kingston in a way. But also, who else is here? Who else was here? And who else is in relation? And I think that that's what the works that Aaron brings to us invoke, and what makes that place such a great space of convergence to have those kind of conversations with these artists.
Yeah, for sure. And I was also going to ask, this new tie-in with the university, with Sebastian being at the Agnes, how did that kind of come to be? And also, I was wondering if you could just speak to the importance of having that tie-in with the Agnes now.
Well, as Aaron was saying, Aaron's already had an existing relationship with Agnes, so we love that when Aaron approached us in bringing this second iteration of the project, we were very excited to work with her. It's just such a privilege to be able to work with an artist and a scholar and a curator that really presses certain issues forward. And I think that the work that Aaron does is just so inspiring in that way, in moving conversations forward. It's kind of a no-brainer, you know, to want to jump at the chance to work with her again. So I'm super happy that she can make time and to come all the way out here from Alberta and invite this really incredible group of artists to come here. And more than one of whom have also relationships to Kingston and Queens as alumni, you know, Aaron Dechter as well is also an artist and a professor at NSCAD and was also an alumna of Queens. And so I think it's really great when our community here in Kingston also, you know, has a significant relationship to this place, and then, you know, come back and revisits it and continues to put that kind of good energy into the community here, I think is just wonderful.
And yeah, especially while the Agnes is also not in a physical space right now, it's really exciting to have an event like this tied to the Agnes.
That's so true. Keep your eyes out, because we're going to be having a lot more offsite works. And in a way, I think it's always really exciting to not necessarily be tied to a place. You know, it really opens up your relationship to being in the community in different ways. So, people just keep your eyes peeled, because Agnes is going to be motoring around all over the place.
Awesome stuff. And how can folks attend these performances and learn more about the exhibition coming up?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways that people can. If they want to actually register, they could go on the Agnes Etherington Art Center's website, and then you'll see the full program of the performances and the dates, and they can register on there. But you know, it's a free event. People can also just drop in. I think that's safe to say, right, Erin? Like it's a city park, so it's, you know, the corner of King Street East and West Street, so which was, I think it's the southeast corner of the park. So just take a look on the website of the different times and dates, as I said earlier, and then just drop on by. And yeah, can't wait to see you there. And for those folks who might want to partake in a little bit of decolonial karaoke, yeah, like drink some water and some tea and get your voices ready, because let's do this.
Once again, that was the curators of Talking Back to Johnny Mac 2, Dr. Erin Sutherland and Dr. Sebastian DeLine. You can catch performances running from October 21st to 25th in City Park at the site of the former statue. All events are free and open to the public. For more information, visit the Agnes Etherington Arts Center's website at agnes.queensu.ca.
Thank you to Christina Laurie from CFRC 101.9 FM for that story. Up next is Dinah Jansen reading a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the reopening of Roswell's rehearsals at 700 Progress Avenue.
Thank you, Jesse. After a nearly 2-year closure, Roswell Rehearsals has reopened its doors to local musicians. Anita and Trevor Johnson, the owners of Roswell's, took over the rental of a space at 700 Progress Avenue on October 1st, just a few weeks before they were set to hit their 2-year anniversary of the closing of the first iteration of the space. Since then, the Johnsons have been relentless in trying to find a different home for the rehearsal center, something they felt would sorely be lacking in the music community without Roswell's existing. Navigating zoning laws and landlords unsure about hosting a music business have proven to make the search more complicated than they ever would have expected, but they found themselves coming full circle as a result of an extensive search. After this arduous search, Roswell's ended up in the same building it was in originally. Anita Johnson said ending up essentially back where they were 2 years ago showcases just how difficult the zoning bylaws make it to find a home for a business like Roswell's. While the pair became excited to hear that they might fall under the city's rezoning of creativity centers, they found that that had them seeking out commercial spaces that weren't a fit due to the price and the kinds of businesses they'd be neighbors with. With some guidance from the Kingston Music Office, they also looked at potentially exploring exemptions at certain buildings, but it didn't go very far and could have been an expensive route to follow. Finally, though, Roswell Rehearsals is officially back in business, and last week the first sets of bands were welcomed into the two practice rooms currently offered within the space. The plan is to eventually take over more of the building, and the Johnsons are currently crowdfunding to try and build more usable rooms. And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that report. Up next is Jesse Bell reading a story from the LJI reporter for the Napanee Beaver, Sarah Williams, that provides information on how to access care in Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Township without a primary care provider.
Thank you, Dinah. Over 2.5 million Ontarians lack access to a primary care physician. Luckily, in Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington, there are still several ways to access health care. The Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Ontario Health Team is focused on attaching all residents to primary care while helping those without a family doctor find the care they need. Residents without a primary care provider can access various services through health homes, walk-in clinics, pharmacies, specialized access clinics, and community outreach programs. These programs offer general health services such as prescription refills and wellness checks, as well as mental health support and specialized care. The FLA-OHT is actively working with partners and local health organizations to continue attaching residents to primary care providers. These providers can be either at clinics or at health homes, as space permits. Health homes are a new model of delivering primary care, where people have access to a team of health care providers close to where they live, ensuring convenient, accessible care for residents within designated geographic boundaries. As capacity allows, people will be attached to health homes based on neighborhood, geographic boundaries that each health home serves. This process has been largely successful, with more than 6,000 individuals having been successfully attached to people-centered health homes across the region in the last year. The FLA-OHT continues to encourage people who do not have a primary care provider to register with Healthcare Connect, the provincial program to help people find a family doctor or nurse practitioner, by calling 1-800-445-1822 or visiting the website. Residents in Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington will continue to be attached to primary care providers through several streams, including Healthcare Connect, local rostering events, and referrals from specialized centers and initiatives. For those in Greater Napanee, there is the Greater Napanee Health Home Access Clinic located in the Napanee Area Community Health Center. This clinic can help with non-emergency issues from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Do make note that it is closed from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. each of those days. For a detailed list of clinics in the region, please visit the FLA OHT website. Thank you to Sarah Williams for that story. Over now to Dinah Jansen with a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the Township of Leeds and Thousand Islands agreement to assist with winter maintenance services for the Township of Front of Young.
Thank you, Jesse. After a successful trial run, the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands will continue to lend a helping hand to another township for winter maintenance. Last week, Council authorized staff to enter into an agreement with the Township of Front of Young, home to Thousand Islands National Park and Browns Bay Provincial Park, to provide winter maintenance services for a period of four winter seasons. In 2023, staff became aware that Front of Young was facing challenges regarding winter maintenance of its roads resulting from a shortage of workforce and an aging fleet. Staff began exploring whether greater efficiencies could be found by incorporating a portion of Front of Young roads and use of its sand dome to round the number of updated plow routes from 8.5 to 9. Based on the findings, a proposal was presented to Front of Young where the township would service certain segments of Front of Young's roads at an hourly rate of $165 plus sand and salt usage calculated using the equipment's onboard computer system. The township would also have access to Front of Young's sand dome for additional loading requirements at the same rate for materials. The agreement was run as a trial for the 2023-24 winter maintenance season. Front of Young indicated satisfaction with the service provided and displayed an interest to move forward with a four-year agreement. Both parties agreed to an increase to an hourly rate of 4% for the upcoming 2024-25 season and annual CPI increases for the following years. A benefit is recognized through this partnership with reduction in average length of plow routes from 97.2 kilometers historically to 86.7 kilometers with the revised plan. And this reduction, staffers say, provides the municipality with faster response time on average and a reduction in driver fatigue.
Thank you to Keith Dempsey from the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. Over now to the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island, Ted Evans, with a story about the Community Grant Committee's request for a $50,000 grant from the Partners in Mission Food Bank.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township's Community Grant Committee will be backing a $50,000 request from the Partners in Mission Food Bank. The recommendation will be brought forward to Council's meeting next week. Due to growth they've experienced, the food bank has outgrown its current space and has had to purchase a larger one. The new building requires renovations, such as new walk-in freezers, offices, a client shopping area, and larger spaces for volunteers to sort food and build food orders. Councillor Lorna Willis described the committee's discussion around the decision.
There was some discussion because the actual facility they're building is not located in Loyalist, but they do provide service within Loyalist, so it was determined by the committee that it was appropriate.
A $60,000 grant for the Cattle Rockway Region Conservation Authority for their well decommissioning project was not supported by the committee. Willis explains.
Basically, the discussion with the committee was they didn't think that it fell within the realm of what the grants are intended for.
This was also the case for a $3,000 request from the Ernestown Barracudas Swim Club. Willis describes why their request didn't fit the requirements.
Primarily because the speakers that they're bringing in, it's not a public event, it's only a private event, and the policy doesn't allow for private events.
Willis notes why the committee chose not to back Kingston Gets Active for a $9,700 request.
The bulk of the money was being paid to a person who was being contracted to do work for them. And it's always a fine line because one of the considerations in the grant policy is it's not to provide wages or salaries. And so it was determined by the committee that we didn't believe it really fit within the guidelines of the policy.
Among other requests the committee will be backing were the Amherst Island Recreation Association requesting just over $2,500 for their Jingle and Mingle event, Lennox and Addington Resources for Children requesting $2,000 for food for their early on program, a request for just over $5,200 from the First Amherst View Bath Scouts Group, and the Loyalist Skating Club of Amherst View requesting just over $2,500 for their end-of-year ice show, plus costumes and equipment storage rental. Willis describes the importance of community grants and why the committee exists.
One of the things about the grants is they're really intended for things that the township would not normally have funds to do. And that's one of the, you know, that was part of the discussion that the committee had in what we should be funding and what we shouldn't. But that's kind of the window that we look through is this something that we wouldn't normally be able to do that adds some vibrancy to the community?
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. The short-lived run of unseasonably warm and bright weather appears to have come to an end as Thursday, October 24th brings a daytime high of 11 degrees, dropping down to negative 1 overnight. Friday, October 25th has a 40% chance of precipitation and a daytime high of 12 degrees. That 40% chance of rain will stay consistent overnight, dropping down to 6. Saturday, October 26th, we're going to see a high of 10 degrees with a 60% chance of precipitation, dropping down to negative 1 overnight. Sunday, October 27th, an 8-degree daytime high also hovering around 0 overnight. Monday, October 28th, we'll see a daytime high of about 13 degrees, and it will be sunny, dropping down to 2 degrees overnight. And Tuesday, October 30th, we will see a high of 16 and an overnight low of 8. This concludes the Environment Canada Weather Report. Sending it over now to Dinah Jansen for CFRC's Community Concert and Events Calendar.
Kingston Community Health Centers will host a senior social group for individuals 55+ from 9:30 to 11:30 p.m. And on Thursday, starting at 7:15, folks can enjoy Dark Night at Fort Fright, a weekly event running through Halloween. Enjoy scary attractions with costumed actors with your family and friends. Tickets start at $30. And the Domino Theater is hosting performances of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde through November 2nd. Tickets range from $10 to $20. And of course, the Grad Club right here at Queen's University is running its free and hugely popular weekly trivia night every Thursday, starting at 8 o'clock. On Thursday, check out Ben Kaplan along with Princess Towers at Broom Factory from 7:30 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $25. The Saxabells are also playing a free show that evening starting at 5 p.m. at the RCHA. Jen Calder is also playing live originals and special favorites for free at the Grizzly Grill from 8 to 11 p.m. on Thursday. On Friday, October 25th, the YMCA will also host its weekly fresh food market from 9:30 to 12:30, a great opportunity to get fresh food at great prices. And also on Friday, Pumpkin Inferno at Kingston Pen is still running various days through the end of October. Check out amazing hand-carved pumpkin exhibits with family. Admission is $16 to $21. Coming up on Friday, you can see Miel Azevedo, Lily, and Dillygaff for free at Hotel Wolf Island from 8:30 onward. The mansion also hosts a short walk to Pluto, the Vanier's, in Montgomery on Friday, starting at 8 p.m. Tickets are $15 at the door. Slush Puppy Place will also have the Arkells with Poolside playing on the Big Feelings Tour on Friday night, starting at 8:30. Tickets start at $41. Also on Friday, KPP Concerts presents Sky Wallace and Ash Malloy at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30. Tickets are $20. On Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, there is a casting call for a short film called A Christmas Story in Kingston. Actors of any gender that look 14 to 19 years of age or 30 to 50 years of age can head over to Pedalworks Cafe and Studio between 2 to 4 p.m. Inquiries should be directed to info at creatopiastudios.com. Also on October 26th from 9 to 2 p.m., the Sydenham Women's Institute is holding their Fall Craft and Bake Sale, an event showcasing a variety of local vendors selling homemade artisan gifts and delicious homemade baking. The event takes place at Golden Links Hall, 4186 Colebrook Road in Harrowsmith, and admission is free. And also on Saturday, October 26th, don't forget to head over to the Broom Factory between 1 and 3 p.m. to hang out with lots of amazing bands at the Music Merch Market. CFRC will also be there DJing. Stop by our booth. On Saturday, you can check out the Big Fat Horn Band for $30 at the RCHA starting at 8 p.m. Also on Saturday, the Grad Club presents My Chem Echo Romance featuring Echoes, Hollowood, and Shook Planet from 9:30 onward. Tickets are $15 at the door. You can also enjoy the live premiere of Austin Wintory's Traveler, a Journey Symphony at the Isabel. Tickets range from $10 to $52 that evening. And also on Saturday night, The Mansion is hosting a pop-punk emo night featuring Monarch, Futura Free, The Backsteps, Alterna, and The Listen Ups. Tickets are $10 for this five-band show starting at 8:30. And on Sunday, check out some lovely folk music by Eric and Megan at the Cove Inn, a by-donation event starting at 5 o'clock. And Roswell Rehearsals is also hosting an open celebration jam at their new space. Tickets are $20 and the fun starts at 4 p.m. And on Sunday, get up and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. with your friends. Folks and families can also head over to Fort Henry on Sunday and multiple dates through the end of October for Fort Fright to check out the Ghouls and Goblins special effects and sound and amazing actors starting at 7:15 through 11 p.m. Admission is $25. Also on Sunday, October 27th, the team at Martha's Table Community Program will host the annual Empty Bowls Fundraiser 2024 at Doubletree by Hilton at 1550 Princess Street. Come and support a great cause while enjoying a variety of soups, take home a handmade bowl from the Kingston Potters Guild, listen to live music, and bid on amazing silent auction items. Tickets can be purchased at marthastable.ca. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 2 p.m. featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. Have a concert or event you would like to add to our online or on-air calendar? Reach out to us today via cfrc.ca. And don't forget to follow us on CFRC on Instagram at CFRC Music. And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via cfrc.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.